Talk about the Donald Trump phenom and the current gaggle of GOP presidential wannabes. I'm fascinated by the fact that my colleagues and former colleagues at the news department end of the hall are so fascinated by what's going on with this guy. They just don't seem to be able to figure out why the popularity. He's going against every known professional politician's grain, and yet they follow him, they forgive him, they ignore his peccadilloes. I want to get your take on that.
Well, part of what's funny is it's many of the media folks who were shocked at how Trump is doing seriously expected Jeb Bush to do well. And it's sort of like, okay, you've got a really dull candidate who's changed his position numerous times and it comes from a tainted family line. Much of the mainstream media was expecting Jeb to be the clear front runner at this point. And he certainly raised a lot of money, and he's gotten a lot of some endorsements from weasels, but he's floundering, happily so. It's fascinating to see how Trump has become so popular. Many of his positions make me shudder. I really have no idea where his campaign is going to go, but it shows how many people and how many Americans have got utter contempt for the political class.
Yeah, that's the part that seems so obvious, that the blow-dried set on the networks and the commentators and all the rest just seem to be baffled by that, the fact that people are really pissed off. They are so full of anger and resentment because of the condescension of the media, the broken promises and total BS from politicians, the cooperation between the two. You sprinkle some crony capitalism on top of the lousy economy and the stock market, and you got a lot of people that are scared, out of work. Some guy stands up here and just starts heaving these dirt balls around and speaking directly and not politically correct to the media, to people in the audience and so on. And bingo, you've got love at first insult. I guess the big question is, in looking at the polls and the business of Trump's appeal, meanwhile, if you can believe the polls, you see, do you think Trump is just going to flame out? And as we get closer to the election, people are going to listen to those folks who have more interesting, more studious, more pragmatic things to say, like a Carson or a Fiorino or something like that.
I was waiting for you to bring in Jeb Bush again.
No. No, he's laughable. I really find him laughable. He's so low energy. It seems like he's a bored, entitled kid. Like, this shouldn't be going this way. I shouldn't have to be out here working this hard.
Yeah, that's a very good description of him. And there are times where I wonder, is he on antidepressants? I don't know. I mean, Ben Carson seems like a nice guy at times. I don't really know that he understands public policy very much at all. It's interesting as far as where Trump is going to go. I'm wondering if he'll be a parallel to Herman Cain, who was the popular media darling for a while in 2011, and he basically got screwed up by his bimbos. There was a wonderful line that Cain had, which is my favorite line from the last presidential election cycle. It was, "What America needs is a leader, not a reader." And Cain was trying to justify not really knowing anything at all when he was asked foreign policy questions. And I think a number of the candidates in this round would fit that same description. I'm curious, Brian, what's your impression of Rand Paul, how he's doing and the choices he's made?
I suppose my considered opinion would be something along the lines of, I had a higher opinion of him at one time.
Okay.
I think that at bottom, he is solid and sincere about his policy positions, his basic policy positions, and their small L libertarian roots. I would have to think that somewhere along the line he was getting some bad advice, listening to the wrong people, because it appeared he was compromising in some areas, and that stunt
really?
With the chainsaw and the IRS, that was dumb. It didn't have that kind of high road classy aspect to it. On the other hand, he doesn't have a lot of lung power when he does have the chance. But the big problem I see with a lot of these people, and Carly Fiorino, I think, is a great example of that right now, is that when she speaks, I mean, if you listen to watch YouTube things, she's really quite remarkable. She's articulate. She's on point. She's focused. And from a policy position, everything I've heard, and I haven't heard everything, is spot on. But you've got the witch doctor. The witch doctor is always the media. They control the vertical. They control the horizontal. They control the volume. And if you don't get on their right side, you don't get on. Then it doesn't really matter how good you are. If you don't get your at-bats, you could be Babe Ruth Jr. You're not going to get a shot at it. And right now, the media is making too much money off the ratings they get from following Donald Trump.
Maybe so. I mean, I'm not nearly as enthusiastic on Carly as you are. I saw her speak at a Washington think tank dinner in June, and you know, it was kind of a strange speech because about a third or maybe half was good or very good, and the other, and a lot of the other stuff she just kept dragging in, being mm-hmm. a woman and the first woman this, first woman that, and talking about her time at HP. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, I'm sitting here looking at my HP printer next to my computer, and you know, HP had great printers in the 90s before she took over. So, but maybe it's not her fault. And I bought an HP computer, I think, when she was CEO, and it was took it back the next day.
We can segue right into Bernie Sanders on this. I get the sense, and I wanted to ask you, you know, if we were on a parallel track here, that, you know, Trump has tapped into this anger, the resentment. America doesn't want to be patsies. Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, has tapped into the envy and entitlement crowd. He's talking about free stuff. He's going to punish the rich. He's going to give it all to these glassy-eyed college kids out there for free college tuition and free everything else. So you got these two really strong appeals going on. Trump tapping into the anger against illegal immigration and crime and hypocrisy and politicians who mealy-mouth their positions. And on the other side, you've got this crotchety old guy, everybody's favorite weird uncle or the grandfather that they didn't have, talking to these 25-year-olds who are airheads for the most part anyway, but he's talking about free stuff. And as long as you're talking about free stuff, you're going to have a hell of a following right there. So that's kind of sort of what I saw going on. And at this stage of the game, like the opening act.
I don't think so. I mean, Trump could go a hell of a lot further than Sanders. I think once folks could pay a little more attention to Sanders, that he'll lose some of the momentum that he had. And I don't know. I'm not really convinced how much he actually has on his own. I think there's vast numbers of liberals, progressives, and Democrats who just loathe Hillary with every drop of blood in their veins, justifiably, mm-hmm. and they're just desperate for any alternative to Hillary and her lies and perhaps her crimes and all the cloud of corruption that has followed her for much of her career and has been accentuated with this Clinton Foundation. It's amazing some of the recent scandals that have been exposed with them that have not gotten more news. More coverage.
Let me ask you about that,
sure.
Because you wrote recently, for Hillary to base her presidential campaign on toppling the 1% is like her husband campaigning in favor of sexual abstinence, which is a great line. You also wrote, Hillary is apparently basing her presidential hopes on the unlimited gullibility of American voters. What I want to know is, where do you think that's going? Do you have any predictions on the future of Hillary and Huma and the bathroom server?
I think Hillary might be in real problem here, because there's this stuff percolating, and we don't know how much more stuff is going to be coming to the surface in the next few months. I think a lot of her big donors are sweating bullets at this point. She's handled it horrendously badly. I mean, you know, a few weeks ago she was, you know, doing some shtick in front of some audience, a friendly audience, and she said, "Well, they were saying that I wiped clean the server. Is that like taking a paper towel or dishcloth and wiping
it?
Ha ha ha!" And I'm thinking, yeah, so that's a great way to classify perhaps a criminal act, but at the least, perhaps an attempted destruction of evidence of wrongdoing. That's the thing about Hillary Clinton, and she has been surrounded by people that have burnished her boots and blown smoke up and for decades, and she's so out of touch that it's interesting. I don't know if it was David Axelrod or one of her former advisors, one of the former people in the Obama administration early on, was imploring her when she left the Secretary of State gig to not go on these paid speaking trips, because she was getting, what, $75,000, $100,000 per speaking gig.
Right.
And there were wonderful stories which came out that she had a list of like 20 or 30 things that she dictated that had to be done this way and that way, and could not take any questions from the media, could not do this, and basically had to have a bunch of what's the old thing for rock stars? You know, that she had to have jelly beans, but not any yellow ones or something like that.
No yellow M&Ms, right?
That's it. All right. Okay, thanks. I could count on your much better memory than mine on that. But no, I mean, they were just, and there were so many details from that. They're just vivified how she was so incredibly arrogant and out of touch. And she's someone who's, the only job she ever got elected to was, you know, the Senate in New York. And that was basically a fixed thing. The same was this fixed with Robert Kennedy.
But, you know, this isn't, none of this is real bulletin news. You and I talked about this stuff back in the early 1990s when we first met. Her attitude, the stories about the White House and the Secret Service and all that business that transpired back then has followed all the way through the health care and secret behind closed doors. Everything that's done. There is nothing that I can think of that you could say about Hillary Clinton from a policy standpoint, administrative standpoint, leadership, anything else, that's positive, or it's scandal, or it's bad, or it's felonious, or damn close to it. And it's really astounding to me that she just keeps, you know, they keep covering her like she's just a regular old candidate and that none of these things ever come up. There's talk about the only way that she's going to be prosecuted is if Obama says so, that this whole thing is under his control or Valerie Jarrett's control.
And this is news. Something interesting about Hillary is that she's not smart enough to hide her arrogance. She's so arrogant that she doesn't need to hide it. I mean, it's sort of like the old joke about some guy that he's so rich he doesn't need to hold in his stomach when he's hitting on women. And it's the same with Hillary and her ego. She thinks she's entitled, like Jeb Bush.
I kind of laughed. I read this line the other day that this whole business about her email and server and her and Huma and all the rest is being investigated by an elite FBI team.
And I wonder. I hope that they know how to use computers, unlike the ones that were supposed to be tracking the terrorists before 9/11. Well, you know, it's just one more term to bolster credibility. No, it's interesting. Rand Paul is excellent on a number of issues, and he is probably the candidate in either party who would do the least damage to the Bill of Rights. It's unfortunate that he's not found a way to present his ideas that can stir more enthusiasm and are clear. I mean, it's like he's
wonky.
Not just wonky, but there's been so much Me Tooism from him, trailing the other GOP candidates. And it's unfortunate because he does have some very good ideas compared to the other candidates. Not as good as his father, but, you know, almost nobody is. But it's been frustrating to see him flounder as much as he had because I thought he'd be doing better at this point. I didn't necessarily think he'd be winning or in the front, but no, I'm surprised, you know, 3 or 4% in Iowa and kind of really not doing squat there.
An element to this, with these, especially on the GOP side, with the Fiorina, the Carson, and the Trump, and these people who have virtually no political experience, everyone is saying that they hate professional politicians. We got to clean out Washington. We got to get rid of these people. Then they turn around and they look at somebody like a Fiorina or a Carson or a Trump, and they say, you know, these people don't know anything about public policy. They don't know anything about being politicians. They don't know anything about running government. Well, what is it going to be? You've got professional politicians, senators and governors whom you don't like because they're professional politicians. So now you've got fresh faces over here who are successful business people, surgeons, whatever, common sense originators. Yeah, that's nice, but, you know, they don't know anything about running government. So why don't we just eliminate government? I mean, that would be my preference anyway. But
perhaps a midway step is, you know, to find a way to let people vote on how much power any election winner should have. Because at this point, we're trying to choose should this candidate or that candidate have, you know, almost absolute power. The power to, you know, copy all our emails, to, you know, send in the drones, maybe to start a war on his own or on her own authority. And the whole idea that any politician should be on a leash. It's interesting, going back to the 1800s, candidates for the presidency would often stress that they would be faithful to the Constitution. It was a bragging point. But nowadays, it's more like, and I'll do this, and I'll do that, and I'll do this. It's like the Constitution be damned.
If I could quote one of your epigrams from the other day, rather than a democracy, we have an elective dictatorship. people merely choose who will trample the laws of the Constitution. You can't get any more plain than that. That's exactly what's going on. We're tolerating right now something that's almost a bald-faced tyranny and a pretty ill-mannered, ill-tempered, embarrassing one at that. And people get on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and they get their snarky comments out there, and they think they've done their civic duty. So it's kind of interesting that that's what it's come down to, because as I see it, as far as Trump is concerned, that's where he's going to lose it. If he ever gets in a debate where they're asking hardcore policy questions, I don't think he's got the depth. I think he's at the real shallow end of the pool on that. He's selling the sizzle, not the steak.
Ha! And who wants to buy the steak these days, Brian? I hope you're right as far as people being more interested in the steak than the sizzle. But there have been lots of times where Trump has Trump's answers have shown that he knows very little, and that is seems to have done little or nothing to slow down his momentum. And I'm certainly not implying that the other candidates are well informed, but it's just fascinating to see that these folks can get away with explaining so little, and once they do give an answer, there's no way to hold it to them.
Well, that's the thing. That's because they're just pissed off. They want a guy to get up there and flip off the establishment and other politicians, and because there's a visceral payoff for that. There may not be a policy, it may not be fiscally imperative, it may not be a whole lot of other things that make for some sort of pragmatic solution, but boy, it really feels good when Donald Trump gets up there and tells these guys they're stupid. Yeah, I've been saying that for years. Yeah. And that's it. I don't need any more than that. People have been single-issue voters for longer than I've been alive anyway, so now they got a guy that's going to sit there and tell everybody else where to stick it. That's good enough for me. I'm going to go ahead and vote for him. Then he gets in there, and then you start learning about his positions on eminent domain and about taxes and about firearms. So, hey, wait a minute. What have we done now? Well, you've just done the same thing you did 8 years ago, just different element content.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting wrinkle in this in the GOP side of the race this year is that most of the candidates are very outspoken, saying that Obama's abused his power, so on and so forth. But very few of them are outspoken as far as condemning George W. Bush's abuse of power, his torture, his wiretapping, his wars, his other power grabs. And it's like, no, I mean, this is a two-party crime spree. And it's been going on for a very long time. So,
but if we were running for office right now and we were counseling one another on that, whether you're running and I'm advising or vice versa, how do you work that in? What benefit accrues to you by bringing that up? You'll see that on Facebook a lot of times. Somebody who's in there ripping the hell out of Obama, and somebody else comes in and says, yeah, but George Bush, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but he's not president anymore. And no matter what he contributed to get us to this point, the handoff was to this guy Obama, and he's the one that's taking it down the field. So, yeah, we can say those things, but the diehards who still think that Bush walks on water but hates Obama, you're going to alienate them. And the idea of educating an electorate that the uniparty is in power and we've got something akin to a modified oligarchy, that these are terms and concepts that I think the average Trump lover, for example, just doesn't even understand, much less take into account.
I'm sorry you've gotten a lack of faith in the American people. That was your best laugh of the day. Okay. At least I made you laugh today. I would think that perhaps we have a better fix if we had a doctor who was actually a proctologist. Hopefully, you know, through luck or through the public response, that there will be some limit on the amount of damage that politicians can do until enough people catch on that we can put a leash on these son of a guns. Yeah, I'm not sitting on the edge of my chair for that. So.
Now I think it's best to just lean back and bring in more popcorn and obviously some more beer. That'll take care of everything. Always a hoot running around the bush on these things, Jim. I thanks a lot for the time. I appreciate your tolerating the unstructured aspect of what we did here today.
Oh, this is fun. Thanks for your kind words. Thanks for mentioning the articles and the books. And it was fun to do that little riff on the Appalachian Trail.
Indeed. We'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, okay. Brian.